As I mentioned a while ago, we're in Luke chapter 9. This happens right after the Transfiguration, and which we mentioned last week. We talked about some of the lessons from the Transfiguration, especially about the fact that Moses and Elijah are no longer going to be the ones that we're to listen to. Moses, the lawgiver, the great lawgiver, Elijah, the great prophet, and we're not to listen to them anymore. So the Father comes and makes His voice known. This is my beloved Son. Hear Him. It's a command. It's an imperative. Hear Him. You don't, the time's coming, you're not going to listen to Moses and Elijah anymore because that law will soon be done, fulfilled. So it's going to be Jesus that you're to listen to from now on. And so that's where we ended up last week there in Luke chapter 9. Now we go to the next thing that Luke records when they come down from the mountain. Luke chapter 9, verse 37. The next day when they came down from the mountain, a great crowd met him. Suddenly a man cried out from the crowd, saying, "Teacher, I beg you, look upon my son, for he's my only child." A spirit seizes him, and he suddenly cries out. It convulses him until he foams at the mouth and bruises him and scarcely leaves him. "I begged your disciples to cast it out, but they could not." Let's stop there for just a moment. This is them coming down. Remember, it was just Peter, James, and John that went on up with Jesus. They were the ones that experienced the Transfiguration. They were the one that heard the voice come from heaven. They're coming down from the mountain. But things have been happening at the bottom of the mountain while they were up on the mountain. Mark has a much longer account of this. So if you go back to Mark chapter 9, verse 14, we'll read a few things that gives us a little more background about what's happening at the base of the mountain with the other disciples and some of the other people. Mark chapter 9, verse 14 says, "When he came to his other disciples, he saw a great crowd around them and the scribes disputing with them. Immediately when all the people saw him, they were greatly amazed and running to him, greeted him. And he asked the scribes, 'What are you debating with them?' One in the crowd answered, 'Teacher, I brought you my son who has a mute spirit. Wherever it takes hold on him, it dashes him to the ground, and he foams at the mouth and gnashes with his teeth and becomes rigid. And I told your disciples so that they would cast it out, but they could not.'" So there's a little more information that Mark has there about what's happening here at the base of the mountain. There's this great big multitude, this great crowd that's around the other nine apostles. Okay, not Peter, James, and John, but the other nine. The crowd had been arguing, basically, disputing, whatever you want to call it, with the Jewish scholars, with the scribes. And the crowd, they come running to Jesus because something has happened about this boy who has this spirit. And back in Luke's account, we find out what was going on. This spirit that was in the boy, this demon, seized him. He would cry out. He would be convulsed. He would foam at the mouth. It would cause him to have bruises. And so this demon could not be cast out by the disciples. That is the reason for all of this happening. Something is wrong, and they want to know what's going on. He was demon-possessed, caused all these problems. And so it says in verse 41 back in Luke 9, this is Jesus' response to his disciples not being able to cast out the demon. And of course, he's talking about the nine apostles here. Peter, James, and John, he's not talking about them, he's talking about the other nine apostles. And the nine apostles, not a single one of them, not a single one of those nine apostles could cast out this demon. And so Jesus' response is to the disciples primarily, "O faithless and perverse generation, So Jesus is really not talking about the other followers or the Jewish scribes or anybody like that. He's pinpointing those nine apostles because they had the power to cast out demons and they couldn't do it. So Jesus' response is, you nine apostles, you're a faithless and a perverse group of people. Pretty strong language coming from Jesus because, remember, this is somewhere about midpoint of his 3+ years of ministry. So these nine apostles had been with Jesus for about 1.5 years. They had seen him do all kinds of miracles. They had the power to perform miracles themselves. So Jesus calls them, you are a faithless and perverse generation. Again, primarily addressing those apostles. Because they should have been able to do it. All right? They should have been able to cast out this demon with no problem. So Jesus doesn't mince any words here. He doesn't sugarcoat or go up and pat him on the back and say, oh, I know your life's been tough. Uh-uh. He comes right out and blasts them. Because there was no excuse for them not being able to do it. And that's why he says, you're without faith. You're a wicked generation, you nine apostles. Because you couldn't do it. You had the power and you couldn't do it. So he is very blunt in telling them that. So he says, how long shall I be with you and bear with you? And Jesus had been with them 1.5 years, teaching them by both words and example. So he says, how long am I going to be with you and bear with you? So he says, bring the son here. So while he was coming, the demon threw him down and convulsed him. See, the demon apparently knew what was going to happen. Demon wasn't stupid. But Jesus rebuked the unclean spirit and healed the child and returned him to his father. And they were all amazed at the mighty power of God. They were all amazed at the mighty power of God. That is quite a story. But that's not the whole story. That's not the whole story. So, if we go back to Mark's account, we learn a little bit more. That's why it's always important to look at the other accounts that include the same act. So, going back to, what did I say? What was the verse? I already lost it. Mark 9, beginning in verse 14, we go down to verse 20. So they brought the boy to him. When he saw him, immediately the spirit dashed him. He fell on the ground and wallowed, foaming at the mouth. And he asked his father, how long has it been since it came to him? He said, from childhood, often it has thrown him into the fire and into the water to kill him. But if you can do anything, have compassion on us and help us. Jesus said, if you can believe, all things are possible to him who believes. Immediately the father of the child cried out with tears, Lord, I believe, help my unbelief. When Jesus saw that the people came running together, he rebuked the foul spirit, saying, you mute and deaf spirit, I command you, come out of him and enter him no more. So the spirit cried out and convulsed him greatly, but it came out of him and he was as dead, so that many said he is dead. But Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him up, and he arose and went and entered the house. His disciples asked him privately, why could we not cast it out? Those nine apostles asked Jesus, we know we should have been able to cast him out. Why couldn't we cast him out? Jesus' response is, this kind cannot come out except by prayer and fasting. Apparently, the nine apostles were just relying on the fact that they could perform miracles without the praying and fasting. And so Jesus said, that's what you lacked. That's why you couldn't cast him out. Yeah, you had the power. You just weren't backing it up. You weren't using it like you were supposed to. He said, you had to also pray and fast. Because that's why you couldn't cast the demon out. So see, Jesus was blaming those nine apostles because they weren't praying and fasting like they should. They could have cast the demon out. They should have been able to cast the demon out. But Jesus was very blunt with them in that respect. He says, you should have been able to do it. So I think there's a lot in Luke's account. Of course, Luke doesn't include a lot of what Mark does. But as far as what Luke records, we need to learn about this power that the apostles had. It wasn't like magic. It wasn't a magical type of power. Yeah, it was power. They could even raise the dead, as we see later, and especially going into the book of Acts. Yeah, they could raise the dead even. But it wasn't some sort of magic. It wasn't a ritual. And so Jesus, again, he corrects them rather bluntly. He says, you should have been able to do this. Should have been able to do it. But you couldn't, because it wasn't accompanied by prayer and fasting like it's supposed to have been. So Jesus very, very bluntly tells them why they couldn't do it. Well, that leads then into what he says next to them. In verse 44, well, at the end of verse 43, but while everyone marveled at all the things Jesus did, he said to his disciples, let these words sink down into your ears, for the Son of Man is about to be betrayed into the hands of men. This is a huge announcement. Not the first time, but it is a huge announcement. He had something very, very important to say to them. And he says, let these words sink down into your ears. And that's pretty much literally what the Greek says here. It's the idea of something being deposited in your mind. This was something they were going to have to really let soak in. All right? This wasn't something in passing. This wasn't some side issue. This was something of great importance. And so Jesus says, again to the 12, I'm going to be betrayed into the hands of men. He says, you've got to let that sink in, okay? Because still the 12 had some great misconceptions about who Jesus was and what he was going to do. Even though he had went over very specifically what he was going to do. But these were all Jewish people. They had the law of Moses. They knew all about the prophecies about Jesus and who he was going to be. So they should have known what Jesus was going to do and what kind of king he was going to be and what kind of Messiah he was going to be. He wasn't going to be a political Messiah, an economic Messiah. He's going to be a spiritual Messiah. Basically means someone who was going to deliver them. They weren't going to be delivered from Roman oppression. They weren't going to be delivered from economic difficulties. They were going to be delivered from sin. And so Jesus is trying to get them to think, let this sink in. Men are going to betray me. And of course that's real significant because Judas is right there in the 12 he's talking to. Men are going to betray me. This was something that they had to let sink in. You know, teachers use that all the time when they're teaching. You got to let this sink in. That's what Jesus is doing to his apostles. You got to let this sink in that I'm going to be betrayed into the hands of men. It says, but they did not understand this statement, and it was hidden from them so that they did not perceive it. And they were afraid to ask him about this statement. There's some real interesting words the Holy Spirit chose to use in this particular section that we need to talk about. The idea about this statement was hidden. This is a phrase that means it was like covered with a veil. Like if someone was covered with a veil in the first century, this would be the word that was used. So like if a woman had a veil over her face covered... this is the same word, hidden. All right? But, more specifically, this has the idea of something that has been done already in the past. So the reason it was hidden from them was because they had chosen to be hidden. They had chosen to not understand what Jesus was saying. Yes. Remember what had happened the week before? Jesus had said already the week before this, I'm going to be delivered into the hands of men and killed and rise the third day. And then what did Peter say? Far be it from you. This is not going to happen. And Jesus comes back and says, Satan, calls Peter Satan. And he rebukes him. That had happened just the week before this. So, denial. And that's this hidden. This was not a some sort of God's supernaturally veiling something so that they couldn't understand it. This was a choice. They chose to be veiled. They chose not to understand. They chose not to know the meaning of what he was saying. Because what he was saying was not what they had been prepared for generations and generations. Especially since the days of Malachi, you know, the end of prophecy, the Jews, during that 400 years of silence, kept expecting a political Messiah, a political deliverer, someone who was going to put them on top, so to speak. And Jesus, from day one, and he's been teaching them for a year and a half at this point, from day one, he's been telling them, that's not me. I'm not coming here to release you from the Romans or to make you a great physical nation or to do any of those things. He says, that's not why I'm coming. I'm coming to die. Well, the apostles and the other followers, just they chose not to believe that. And so the Holy Spirit says it was veiled from them. It wasn't veiled because it was impossible to understand. It wasn't veiled because God caused it to be veiled. They chose not to believe it. So it was a choosing on their part. So they didn't want to believe that Jesus was going to die. They didn't want to believe that, even though he had told them he was going to rise from the dead. He'd already told them that. So even though he had told them he wasn't going to be dead, period, forever, they still wouldn't accept the fact that he was going to have to die before he lived again. They just didn't want to accept that. So, you know, the Bible talks about people who choose not to believe the truth. They choose not to believe the truth, even though the truth is staring them right in the face. Yes. Yeah, okay. Choose not to believe the truth for a month or two. Absolutely. See, it's that choice. It's the choice again. They're choosing, all right? God doesn't force them to believe that. And there's ample evidence about what's true and what's not true. But it's a choice. It's all about a choice about what people are going to believe or not believe. Well, that's what was with the apostles. Even though daily teaching for a year and a half about what was really going to happen, they still didn't believe it. And so, of course, when we get to the Friday of his trial, he's in the upper room, you know, before the betrayal and all that, and he says, I'm going to send the Holy Spirit to you, the 12 apostles, and he's going to guide you into all truth. And that's why they were told, remember, to stay in Jerusalem until the power comes upon them. And then, of course, that happened in Pentecost. And then from then on, they, by inspiration, taught about what the Messiah was, what his purpose was, what his kingdom's about. And so that was, this is a real, I think I mentioned last week, this is a real turning point in the life of the apostles. This is a real critical junction in their teaching. And it's a critical junction in the followers, because Jesus is, he's pretty much stopping the miracles. I mean, they're not completely stopped. But him going into all these different places and healing the sick and so forth is about ready to end. And of course, John chapter 6 is about the same time frame as Luke chapter 9. And we talked about how in John chapter 6, he kind of got on to the multitudes because they were just following him for the miracles, the food, the healing. And that's the point where it says that many of his followers walked away, chose not to follow him anymore. So Jesus has just about peaked as far as his following is concerned. From this point on in his ministry, it's pretty much all headed toward Jerusalem and all headed toward him being killed. And his popularity overall is certainly going to start waning. Okay, it's going to start waning here very soon. Well, our time is up, I see. It kind of went by pretty quick. But Lord willing, we will start talking next Sunday morning about who's the greatest in verse 46. Another problem the apostles had with.